It's Wednesday, April 17th, and look, we don't normally do birthday shout-outs on the pod, unless it's my birthday, of course, because then we milk it for all it's worth. But April 17th is a very big day in my household, because there are three birthdays to celebrate. My brother Seth, sister-in-law Lucia, and Nana Erin. So happy birthday to everyone, and to all of you out there with April 17th birthdays as well. It's a popular date. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. Stuff is saving News Hub. Well, the 6pm bulletin at least, so what will it look like? The bosses of both Stuff and Warner Brothers Discovery join us. How a 20-year-old university student ended up being falsely identified as the killer behind the Bondi Junction stabbings. Will the scrapping of death limits for New Zealand sea lions in the southern squid fishery put the endangered species further at risk? Plus, the first ever beauty pageant for AI women has been announced, and I don't like the sound of it one bit. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
The dust is somewhat starting to settle on the recent mega media news. Stuff has won a tussle over news at TV3 and will produce a daily bulletin that will be aired on TV3 from July 6th, the day after Warner Brothers Discovery was shutting down News Hub for good. But what will this new look bulletin look like? Joining us now is Stuff's owner and publisher, Sinead Boucher, and Warner Brothers Discovery head of networks for New Zealand, Australia and Japan, Glenn Kine. Tēnā kōrua. Sinead, what does this move do for the media landscape? On one hand, it saves the news for TV3, right? But on the other, we've still lost that separate media voice.
I think it's overall a positive for the media landscape. Look, we will be hiring more journalists. We will be producing news that's going to reach more people, not only on TV3, but on 3Now as well. And look, I think that's it's a reflection of the environment that we're all operating in, which is challenging and difficult, but we have more consumer demand for news than ever before. And we're really pleased to be in a position to be able to meet that need.
Sinead, I know this is the question everyone keeps asking, but what is it going to look like? Is this going to be a traditional news bulletin with half an hour, say, of news, sports news, and then weather?
I think everyone will have to sit down and tune in on July 6th and they will find out.
You don't want to tell us here first on Newsable. Glenn, turning to you now, is this a long-term commitment from Warner Brothers Discovery in terms of maintaining some sort of news service on TV3?
Absolutely, and I think the 6pm bulletin is the start. It's at the core of the partnership and how we want to innovate together. I think, look, you know, as you've pointed out, we're seeing declining traditional broadcast audiences, but huge growth in our digital video audiences. And I think, you know, this partnership starts to create opportunity around how do we grow into the future to connect with those digital audiences. And I genuinely believe that these types of innovations and partnerships are going to be the way of the future.
Are you confident, Glenn, that this is going to succeed and we won't see Warner Brothers Discovery's American owners pulling the plug again?
No, I think this has the full endorsement of the Warner Brothers Discovery American owners. That's the first thing I'd say. And you know, I've been highly impressed with Sinead, her team, and the proposition that has been put forward. So we have every confidence.
Sinead, how is Stuff going to make sure the evening news is doing the things it needs to do, aka moving away from the traditional news format that has failed for Warner Brothers Discovery and also seen cuts at TVNZ?
Well, I think one thing that Stuff has been great at is innovating and challenging itself and being bold and doing things differently. Like, we've got a real record of doing that. And particularly in the last few years, as an independent company, we can just really go for it. And I'm looking forward to bringing some of that ethos, the Stuff follow no one ethos, to bear in for Warner Brothers Discovery.
Glenn, what was the mood with News Hub staff? Obviously, this is very exciting, but only for some of them, right? Not all of them will be part of this future.
Yeah, and I think that's the core of the dichotomy of the news, is that it is important for our democracy and, you know, extremely pleased that we can continue on with the new service. But unfortunately, that doesn't mean jobs for everyone. And so that, you know, there's a sadness inside me as a result of that.
And Sinead, when will we get clearer answers on how many News Hub staff will potentially be brought over?
Look, I think that'll develop over a period of weeks, really, as we really firm up exactly what we're going to produce, how we're going to produce it, and in discussions with Warner Brothers as well, all the way.
Sinead, does this mean any changes to Stuff and what Stuff does and how it operates?
It will obviously mean some changes within the day for all of our staff, because I think one of the great things is that we have more than 300 journalists all around the country, and they will now have a great new outlet for their journalism, a way to reach people, to have more impact with that journalism. So I think it's a great chance for our newsrooms to really think about how to incorporate that into their day.
Staff's owner and publisher Sinead Boucher and Warner Brothers Discovery Head of Networks for New Zealand, Australia and Japan, Glenn Kine. Kia ora kōrua, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A little later on in the show, I'm going to explain the ins and outs of this AI women beauty pageant. It is what it says on the tin. It's a beauty pageant for women made with AI. I feel icky about it, and I would love to know your thoughts as well. What do you think of beauty pageants for AI women? Is it weird or is it fine? Vote in our poll on the NZ Stuff Instagram, and as always, you are welcome to flick me an email if you'd like to, newsable@stuff.co.nz. It's been a number of days now, but Sydney is still reeling and recovering from the horrific fatal stabbing attack on Saturday at Bondi Junction's Westfield Mall. The Australian city already having to deal with another stabbing too, with authorities in New South Wales confirming the stabbing of a bishop at a church service on Monday night is being treated as a terror event. Now, one man who got caught up in the Bondi incident is university student Benjamin Cohen, who for 14 hours was public enemy number one after being falsely identified as the man behind the shopping mall knife rampage in which six people were killed. Kevin Nguyen is a reporter for the ABC Investigations in Australia and decided to track exactly what happened and when these false allegations started to come out. And he's with us now. Kia ora and welcome to Newsable.
Thank you for having me.
Where exactly, Kevin, did the claims it was a university student start and come from?
Every time there is a mass casualty event, false names, false allegations, incorrect information goes wild. This is not new. This has been happening for a long time. Where it started from, we weren't able to confirm the exact genesis, but it was about 2 and a bit hours after the police confirmed and had the first press conference. And in that press conference, they did say, well, you know, we're still working it out. We don't have any identities. We're still trying to even work out who has unfortunately passed from the attack. And the first mention of Benjamin Cohen is the young person's name. He's 20 years old. We knew the attacker later was about 40. He's a former musician. He teaches kids how to code. Very lovely man. I've spoken to him a few times now. And his name first appeared on Twitter in a very, very odd way. There was a lot of claims that the person was Middle Eastern, Islamic. And those came from the usual, you know, circles of mischief makers and far right, neo-Nazis throwing it out. But this was the first time personally that I've seen in my kind of almost 10 years of doing this kind of work, where it was someone who these kind of groups were really trying to pin these attacks on someone from a Jewish background. So from there, a few hours later, it's only getting about 125 mentions, but it's not until a pro-Putin influencer named Semyon Boykov, who is well known for spreading misinformation. He is currently inside the Russian consulate in Sydney, hiding away because there are warrants out for his arrest for alleged assault. And he basically helped start this massive fire. And from there, it took off. It went from 125 mentions to 50,000 overnight, and that was the moment it started.
Yeah, wow. And what did we see from there? Did any prominent people or reputable outlets start reporting that it was Ben?
Yes. So overnight, it gains traction internationally. We see different kinds of personalities swirled around. I won't name the accounts, but these are accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers, you know, altogether millions combined. You know, we took a look at how far reaching it was, and you know, these tweets mentioning this poor man Benjamin Cohen's name is viewed millions and millions and millions of times. So over the next few hours, these incredibly influential Twitter accounts, verified Twitter accounts, which, you know, definitely does not mean what it used to mean about 2 years ago, posting his photo and posting his name and calling him a Jewish extremist or a radical Jewish man.
This whole situation, of course, is part of a wider issue, right? People online, on social media, deciding to take things like police investigations and cases where there's been murder or missing persons and trying to solve the case themselves. How bad is that at the moment?
There is no way that the spreading of Benjamin Cohen's name, a Jewish name and a Jewish man, would have occurred or was not somewhat motivated by the political tensions and the political rifts that have come from the latest war in Israel and Gaza. I think that I have seen a lot of people who had posted and shared it uncritically, people who should have known better. You know, it went from this misidentification, which could be incredibly damaging, could be incredibly dangerous. You know, Ben was very, very smart. He locked down his private media before all of this happened. And these platforms like Twitter are allowing this in a way because they're not responding fast enough to misinformation in an increasingly polarized space like Twitter. There is less oversight, there's less restraint.
Very interesting stuff. Kevin Nguyen from the ABC Investigations in Australia. Thank you very much for your time.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
We're about to speak with a marine biologist on the government's scrapping of mortality limits for the New Zealand sea lion. And if you haven't already, do chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform so that you never miss an episode. We pride ourselves on our efforts to preserve wildlife and market New Zealand as clean and green. But a conflict between fishers and conservationists is emerging over the New Zealand sea lion. These marine mammals are the world's rarest sea lion, and with a population of just 10,000, they feature on an international red list of endangered species. But now the Fisheries Minister, Shane Jones, has scrapped the fishing-related mortality limit that sets the maximum number of accidental sea lion deaths allowed during commercial trawling for squid in the Southern Ocean. The fishing industry and the Ministry for Primary Industries both argue trawling nets are fitted with sea lion exclusion devices, which mean they can pop out if they accidentally get caught or stuck. We're joined by Professor Steve Dawson from Otago University, a marine biologist, to talk about this more. Kia ora, Professor. Can you tell us about these sea lions? What are they like and why are they so endangered?
Well, they've had a hell of a tough history. The archaeological studies show that they were once widespread around the whole New Zealand mainland, and it looks like they were hunted to extinction on the mainland by Maori. So before Europeans arrived, these animals were reduced to the southern offshore islands. And then along came commercial sealing, and that hit them pretty hard as well. So since then, they have been slowly recovering, but they've been hit by a series of recent declines. In the last year, their pup numbers have declined by something like about 23%. So they're not doing well. What are they like? Well, they're real characters. The pups are fantastic fun. They're curious. They're playful. They're just like puppies, really. They play fight with each other, chase each other around, and sometimes interact quite playfully with humans. So I've had them mouthing my boots, and a friend of mine had one fall asleep in her lap.
How important, Steve, is this mortality limit? Has it made any difference when it comes to improving the numbers?
The squid trawlers must use a sled, a sea lion escape device. That device is effectively a grid that channels any large object out of the top of the net. So the idea is a sea lion comes into the mouth of the net, hits the grid, and then gets channeled out of the top of the net. The trouble is, when the sled's in place, there's no way you can know how many sea lions have been injected by it. And more importantly, you can't know whether they've been seriously hurt or injured, concussed in that process. And let's not forget, this is happening at 100 to 200 metres deep. So it's one thing to have a bang on the head. It's another thing to have a bang on the head and have to swim, you know, 200 metres to the safety of your air supply. I think it's irresponsible to assume, as MPI do, that they are effective enough to ensure that sea lion populations aren't harmed. And the mortality limit actually restricted the fishery to a certain number of trawl tows. You could see it as the stick behind the door. And MPI's scrapping of it effectively takes the brake off the fishery and they can do what they like.
Right. There are often tensions between economic activity and the well-being of wildlife. Does this decision raise wider worries for you?
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, I think we need to remember two things. The first is that this is a threatened endemic species. In other words, it's found nowhere else than New Zealand. And that surely gives us a responsibility to ensure its populations recover from the past and current threats. And the second thing is I don't want to restrict fishing in the subantarctics unnecessarily, and I'm sure no one does. But the outcomes of making the wrong decision are not equally bad. So, for example, if fishing is restricted unnecessarily, certainly some money will be lost, but that fishery can build up again in the future. If, however, fishing continues or increases and the sea lion population is forced into a serious decline, well, that outcome may not be reversible.
Marine biologist Professor Steve Dawson from Otago University, thank you for taking the time to kōrero.
Thank you for having me.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, time to talk AI beauty pageants. I mean, I really should have seen this coming. But yes, the title of Miss AI is about to be up for grabs. AI-generated contestants will be judged on their looks, the technical skill that went into creating them, and their social media following as well. According to Forbes, a men's comp is in the pipeline. There's a cash prize up for grabs. There'll be a panel of judges, two of which are human, but the rest are AI judges. The whole thing feels yucky to me. In my opinion, this looks like it'll just be an exercise in women being objectified. Beauty pageants have long drawn criticism for promoting unrealistic beauty standards, and now we're adding literally fake beauty standards into the mix here too. So let me know what you think as well. I'd love to hear from you on the NZ Stuff Instagram poll. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
This pod took time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wazz! Go the Black Caps. And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footage,
I do.
Don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer. Right?
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates soccer?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne Every Bit Different.